Well, I think Winston Churchill said it best. You make a living by what you get. You make a life by what you give back. And, you know, we were blessed, you know, when we went public in 2005, and then when we did our subsequent demutualization in 2014, we donated $40 million to our foundation. And that foundation, you know, has probably given away over $40 million over that period of time. And we've stepped it up during the pandemic crisis, you know, and we also put a budget together of about $150,000, $200,000 for our 150 branches. And we wanted our branch people to go out and reach out to customers, elderly customers, or people that, you know, were in need of food banks, first line providers, healthcare providers, and help them through this process.
It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business.
From the studios of WABC in New York City and available online at mybradio.com, you are listening to another great episode of Mind Your Business, sponsored this evening by Investors Bank. My name is Mike McIntyre, and I am your substitute host for this evening's show. We have a great show tonight, and I am so happy to be here. This evening, we will be speaking with several well-known business leaders as we discuss the overall public and private sector initiatives that are helping small businesses recover and restore their operations in the wake of the COVID shutdown. You know, I'm really happy to be here. And, you know, before we begin, I want to take a few moments and just recognize our regular host, Yitzhak Safwas, as he's taking the evening off to be with his family here on Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the Jewish calendar. You know, having grown up in Brooklyn myself, you know, on the outskirts of Borough Park, you know, having exposure to multiple cultures and faiths is just another great reason why, you know, living in New York City and being a business owner is probably one of the best things in the world to do. A little bit about me, lifelong New Yorker, grew up in Brooklyn. I've moved to that other borough known as Queens. I am responsible as my day job, and I will be in tomorrow morning, bright and early, even though this is 10 o'clock on a Sunday night. I am responsible for the business and government bank at Investors Bank. We are a nearly $30 billion community and commercial bank with branches and offices throughout New York, New York City, and Long Island. We are based in Short Hills, New Jersey. We've had several shows over the past months addressing topics such as COVID, PPP, and most recently on valuations. Tonight's show is a continuation of the months-long conversation as we bring together key thought leaders to discuss the recovery from the pandemic. We have a great roster of guests tonight. We have Chip Halleck, President and CEO of the Newark Regional Business Partnership, Randy Piers, Brooklyn and CEO of the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce, Michelle Sikirka, President and CEO of the New Jersey Business and Industry Association, and Kevin Cummings, Chairman and CEO of Investors Bank. We're going to take a commercial break, so please stay tuned.
Phil Simms and Boomer Esiason know the importance of having the right players on your team. So Investors Bank asked them to talk about business banking in their terms.
Hey, Boomer, what makes a winning team?
The right roster
and the right game plan.
Yeah, and the right quarterback.
What are you trying to say?
Investors Bank builds strong relationships and provides customized business banking solutions grounded in knowing the needs of your business. Investors Bank is more than a business bank. They're your business partner. Investors Bank. Banking in your best interest. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
You are listening to another great episode of Mind Your Business, sponsored this evening by Investors Bank. My name is Mike McIntyre, and I am your substitute host for this evening's show. We have a great show tonight, and I am so happy to be here. This segment here I've been looking forward to all week. I am delighted to have on the panel this evening Michelle Sikirka, President and CEO of the New Jersey Business and Industry Association, and Kevin Cummings, our Chairman and CEO of Investors Bank. A bit about Michelle. For 6 years, Michelle has been leading the NJBIA. They are the nation's largest, most influential employers organization, advocating on behalf of New Jersey's large and small businesses for policies that will make New Jersey more affordable and regionally competitive. Michelle has also been at the forefront in efforts to build a more effective workforce development alliances in New Jersey between academia, business, and government. The NJBIA Post-Secondary Education Task Force year-long study of New Jersey highest in the nation millennial out-migration, produced a 13-point action plan that is driving policymakers' discussions on how to retain our future workforce. Kevin Cummings, our CEO, my boss, was appointed chairman of the board of Investors Bank 12 years ago. We are nearly a $30 billion bank. Prior to joining Investors Bank, Kevin worked at KPMG for more than 25 years, supporting financial services in both New Jersey and abroad. I am so glad to have you both here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good to be here, Mike.
Thank you, Kevin. Kevin, tell us about the bank's response to the pandemic. I know you and I had many long days, nights, weekends, but you know, if you had to summarize how the bank's response was, I'd love to hear about it.
Mike, I had hair when, before the pandemic. You know, it's been a most amazing 6 months. It started out, and actually, we started talking about it in mid-February, and you know, the way things evolved, we changed things. You know, the decision making, the leadership. You know, it was very, very challenging time. We had a situation, you know, where we had to, you know, put in new systems because of the people working at home. And it was managing the expectations and managing people's, almost their fear over that period of time. And I think it was March 12th, you know, things changed in a heartbeat. You know, we also had the partnership with the SBA. We had a loan deferral program in place. All of these things were with the customer and our employees in mind. And I think as we moved through the process, it was probably some of our, you know, biggest disappointments and failures, but some of our greatest accomplishments. With the SBA loan, we were able, starting from scratch, about 150 people working together, the PPP program, we were able to fund close to $330 million in loans, probably saved 40,000 jobs. And most importantly, we provided $48 million, about almost $50 million to the not-for-profit space. So we stepped up, we faced a challenge, and it was probably the most exhilarating part of my career. You know, it was, you know, 40 plus years in business. You know, it was every day. The days were long, but the weeks flew by. It was a very exciting time.
Yeah,
it's been, it still is, yeah, believe me.
It's been an incredible 7 months, to say the least. You know, turning to Michelle. Michelle, keep me honest here. You know, in doing my research about the NJBIA, is it true that you truly represent 12,000 businesses and over a million jobs in the state?
Oh, indeed we do. Indeed we do.
Amazing. So the NJBIA is an advocacy organization. You know, what role did the NJBIA play during the pandemic?
Yeah, well, early on, we were just the go-to for every answer to every question that every business had. So there's no membership wall when you're in a crisis. We were 24/7 call center, literally. Am I essential business? Am I not essential business? Can I be open and can I not be open? What am I going to do? I can't put food on my table. And this was our entire team. I mean, you know, myself included, 24/7, taking painful, painful, painful calls. On the advocacy side, then, you know, we quickly organized the New Jersey Business Coalition, which was the bringing together of over 100 business and nonprofit associations to work together to advance policy that could help business during this time. That was advancing policy at the state level as well as the federal level. And then, of course, we started moving into how do we get New Jersey open? And we put forth the reopening and reinvention framework, which was a plan to get New Jersey businesses back up and running and to stimulate our economy. And we're still challenging, you know, to get the opening going. Some think New Jersey is open for business, but, you know, our businesses are only open at 25 or 50% capacity. We are nowhere near open for business. We got a long way to go.
You know, and as we talk about the recovery now, you know, you and I talked briefly about the overall recovery phase. What is NJBIA doing in terms of recovery, and how can people learn more about this?
Yes, well, at our website, njbia.org/recovery is a page with a host of resources. Everything from a reopening toolkit to access to a certification program of how to open safely to best practices by industry. There's about 30 some odd best practices by industry up there. The framework document I mentioned before, which is literally, you know, a glide path to how can we safely and responsibly reopen the state's businesses. You know, and I just have to say, New Jersey businesses take this very seriously. all along the way, when we advocate for reopening, we're not just saying, you know, just open haphazardly. We were saying all along that any business that could check the safety boxes, you know, the safeguards to keep their workforce and their visitors and anyone who frequents their facilities safe, when you can check all those boxes, you should be able to be open. That's what we have advocated for.
You're listening to 77 WABC's Mind Your Business, presented this evening by Investors Bank. Kevin, as I turn to you, talking about, you know, these fast 6 and 7 months that we've just been through, you know, how did the bank protect its customers and its employees?
Well, first off, we kept all our branches open. You know, banking is an essential service. And with the corporate staff, we had them working from home, and it was a big IT challenge. But, you know, we've implemented cleaning protocols in the branches. Anytime we have an outbreak or anything, we send the employees home, any type of exposure that employees have. So we've been very mindful of safety first for our employees and also our customers. So that's been the mindset. Having said that, though, we've made, you know, tremendous progress bringing people back. I think in June 6th, we brought back 25% of the workforce, and slowly but surely, we've been doing it through the course of the summer. Right after Labor Day, we're up to almost 75%. And what we're doing now is having a little more flex time. So at any given time, we have the social distancing in the corporate offices. We might have anywhere from 55 to 65% of that 75%, you know, working maybe 3 or 4 days a week or 2 days from home and things like that. This work at home situation is going to be a challenge for us going forward, because I think the employees like it. And I think it's going to change our mindset, you know, going forward, where it's going to become part of the permanent work structure, you know, in the future.
Yeah, you're hearing about this from other banks as well, struggling to bring back all their folks at the same time. I agree with you 100% on that one. You know, turning to Michelle, you know, the economy is still struggling. From the businesses that you represent, how are they surviving?
I mean, most of them aren't, to be frank. You know, when we're talking about Main Street businesses, we survey our members because we want to keep in tune with what they're experiencing and whether or not we're seeing the needle move for the economy. But I could tell you that, you know, 83% of the businesses that we surveyed said that they can't operate, they can't survive or sustain on less than 50% capacity. 18% said they need 100% capacity. And I'm not even talking about to turn a profit. I'm just talking about to cover their expenses. So you think about restaurants, you know, indoor dining only open 25%. Some retail only open 50%. You know, restaurants, the rug was pulled out of them back in July when they thought they were going to open and then told they couldn't. We're going into cool weather now, so outdoor dining isn't really a great option in New Jersey. And so, businesses are struggling significantly.
And obviously that has a tremendous impact on the workforce. How do you see jobs changing now? I mean, and how, what kind of new skills are you seeing from employers and from employees that have to be developed during this time?
Yeah, you know, being an advocate for workforce development, working so closely with our educational institutions, we knew that there was a skill gap way before COVID. We were already working on the challenges of filling the skill gap, meaning that we hear from our employers that the workforce just doesn't have the skills at the ready that are needed to step in and do the jobs that they need. A lot of those skills are things like technology, but also it's employability and soft skills, being self-directed, teamwork, good communication. I mean, these things sound very fundamental, but I could tell you we had tens of thousands of vacant positions, middle-level skilled jobs in the state of New Jersey before COVID that we didn't have a skill set to fill. And so we were working on certification programs and things like that and partnering with our community colleges to build those skills. Now you layer COVID over it and you take this whole issue of being in a remote environment, and those skills I talked about a few minutes ago are even more important. Not just the technology of like, how do I get on a Zoom call, but how do you be self-directed? How do you be, you know, in a routine in a work environment to be effective and efficient? How do you be a critical thinker to solve problems, you know, on your own, because you're sitting in an office by yourself and you can't just go knock on the cube next door, right?
It's a challenge, but you know, one of the things that I love about your organization is your mission not only is to facilitate job creation, but you also help to facilitate skill development. And so that's just something that I think is very impressive about what you're doing. You know, turning to Kevin, Kevin, you and I've been here now for almost a year and a half, and you know, coming here, and we've
time
been
flies when you're having fun.
It does indeed. But you know, the reputation of our bank is one that's been evolving from a community bank to a commercial bank. But our reputation in the community, I mean, we give back in so many ways. And while this isn't meant to be a plug about what we're doing, but I'd love to understand, and I think our viewers would love to hear about all the things that you have done to support our community and our not-for-profits. Can you please give us a few examples of that?
Well, I think Winston Churchill said it best: "You make a living by what you get; you make a life by what you give back." And you know, we were blessed, you know, when we went public in 2005, and then when we did our subsequent demutualization in 2014, we donated $40 million to our foundation, and that foundation, you know, has probably given away over $40 million over that period of time. And we've stepped it up during the pandemic crisis, you know, and we also put a budget together of about $150,000, $200,000 for our 150 branches. And we wanted our branch people to go out and reach out to customers, elderly customers, or people that, you know, were in need of food banks, first line providers, healthcare providers, and help them through this process. And I was very proud of what, you know, some of the stories coming back, you know, of people working with the local hospital, the food bank down in Newark, St. John's Kitchen, and all those different organizations. We were able to step up and make a difference. It's time, treasure, and talent. One of the other things we also, you know, remarkably through this pandemic, we closed a $600 million transaction out on Long Island and doubled our presence with 8 new branches out in Nassau and Suffolk County. And as part of that, you know, transaction, we made, with the announcement and the closing of that transaction, we made a $100,000 donation to Stony Brook Hospital, Stony Brook University Hospital, and helped them in their fighting this pandemic. So it was, you know, a great combination, you know, living our core values and making a difference and touching our customers and helping them through this pandemic.
You're listening to 77 WABC's Mind Your Business, presented this evening by Investors Bank. As we wrap up this segment, this question is really is for the both of you. I'll turn to you, Michelle, first. You're both well connected at the federal, state, and local levels in the jobs that you do. Do you think that our ongoing response to COVID-19 requires a public-private partnership? How would that ideally work? Michelle, I'd welcome your views on that.
Oh, 100%. I mean, collaboration is the key all across the board. But, you know, I do just want to say, you know, all that Kevin just talked about, this is why I say all the time, great businesses make great communities. And that's why we need to ensure that our businesses are strong. Because without the strength of those businesses in our communities, we can't have the philanthropic giving. You know, it's the businesses that make the difference on the Main Street. And so we need to make sure they sustain. So how do we do that in public-private partnership? We work with our local municipalities and our counties to bring business together with their local elected officials to make sure through this time right now that everyone understands how do we keep people safe in our communities. Because if we keep people safe in our communities, then we can get these businesses back up and running, and then our main streets can be healthy, and then those businesses can give back in the ways that Kevin mentioned.
Okay. Kevin, your thoughts?
Well, I think the PPP program is a perfect example of a public-private partnership. You know, no way the SBA with its infrastructure could have put that type of money. I think they averaged the last 5 years about $30 billion, getting it out over a 12-month period. And from the middle of April to, say, the end of May, it was close to, you know, $450 billion that was expended to loans made to those small businesses that were in dire need. Just think of all the hotels and restaurants that needed that money, and it kept them alive. And most importantly, it gave them hope, you know, to get through this. And I always just hope, you know, we'd get the government down in Washington, you know, to get that next wave of it, because there are certain businesses, the healthcare business, the restaurants, the hotels, they're still in dire need of support, you know, as a result of this pandemic.
My thanks to Michelle Sekirka and Kevin Cummings for a fantastic segment. A reminder, for more information about the New Jersey Business and Industry Association, please visit njbia.org. And for more information as to how Investors Bank can support you and your banking, please visit investorsbank.com. Michelle and Kevin, thanks for a great segment and have a great week. Take care.
So much.
We're now going to take a brief commercial break. Please stay tuned.
Phil Sims and Boomer Esiason know the importance of a smart playbook, so Investors Bank asked them to talk about business banking in their terms.
Hey, Boomer, remember how you were always getting sacked?
Not when I called the right play.
Well, maybe you should have memorized the playbook.
Every page?
Investors Bank provides a proven playbook grounded in knowing the needs of your business. With industry experience in commercial real estate, technology, and healthcare, Investors Bank is more than a business bank. They're your business partner. Investors Bank. Banking in your best interest. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
You are listening to another great episode of Mind Your Business, sponsored this evening by Investors Bank. We have a great show tonight, and I am so happy to be here. My name is Mike McIntyre, and I am your substitute host for this evening's show. Our next guest this evening is Chip Halleck, President and CEO of the Newark Regional Business Partnership. Chip has been the President and CEO for more than 20 years. The NRBP is a leading membership-based organization connecting businesses in the greater Newark region. By connecting, informing, and advocating on behalf of its members, the NRBP strengthens the region's infrastructure and revitalizes Newark's largest city. Chip, welcome, and thanks for joining us tonight. I appreciate having you on the show.
We appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, Mike, and talk a little bit about the Newark Regional Business Partnership, what's going on in Newark.
So tell me what's going on in Newark. So what have the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic been on the business community? What are you seeing?
Yeah, well, where do you begin? That's a heck of a question. Obviously, it varies widely. It's safe to say that every business has been affected in some way. The most dramatic effect, I think, here has been felt in hospitality and travel. Newark Airport is simply not flying anywhere near, maybe even a third to 40% of its capacity. The hotels are, for the most part, empty, way below 40% capacity. Our restaurants, small retailers are suffering. So I think, that's been the most, that sector has been very dramatic. You know, we also have the Prudential Center here, which is a great place to see a concert or a game, as well as New Jersey PAC, which has all sorts of varied entertainment. So it's been those, I think those are the areas that have been most severely impacted. And then, you look at some less affected as well.
So, on that regard, some businesses have obviously closed, but others are surviving. How are those businesses remaining functional in this post-COVID environment?
Well, I think it depends on what kinds of businesses they are, of course. Less affected, kind of the professional services area in northern New Jersey, and Newark in particular, has a lot of, professional firms, architects, engineers, attorneys, accountants. So we have a lot of those. And I think a lot of them have been very busy during this pandemic, a lot of it related to some government action. So on both the HR side as well as the finance side. So certainly, those kinds of companies have been affected, but, much, much less. On the other side, you talk about positively, technology businesses have been through the roof. And we know from the stock market, they went crazy early on. But even, small consulting firms that are providing services to make sure small businesses, small organizations like ours can function function remotely. So that's been an area, I think, and cybersecurity is another one connected, obviously, to that.
Yeah.
That's been very important.
Tonight's topic is really about recovery of small businesses in the post-pandemic world. What businesses are recovering, and what are you seeing, and what are the drivers of those businesses that are recovering more quickly?
Well, I think, some of them who have recovered, some of them recovered quickly, got their legs under them, and some of them never stopped. Construction is one example. I think there were some tense moments there, but projects that were underway, I think have really recovered quite nicely and have really picked up steam and actually made up some ground over what they otherwise might have been doing. I think, traditional office environments have also come back, those especially that were already working virtually. They didn't have much of an adjustment, so they were able to come back fairly quickly. And actually, we talk a lot about, people have talked a lot about restaurants. And many restaurants have obviously been hit very hard, but others were able to adapt. And I think, I can go through a couple of the traits and of those who have done a good job of adapting. to different changes in menus, changes in how they can accommodate people in their stores, how they market themselves. So adaptability is one of the attributes that have been, you know, very important for those companies.
Yeah, you know, we've talked several times over the past few months about businesses reinventing themselves, you know, and your organization is representing, you know, a very large, substantial part of the North Jersey market. What traits are you seeing that are allowing some businesses to survive and actually thrive while others are not doing as well?
Yeah, I think adaptability, the ability to make changes is certainly important. Your mindset, you know, being prepared and always looking for that next opportunity. The get it done attitude is another one that's certainly been important. And, you know, having the financial resources, while there were varying degrees of help available for businesses, that help didn't come immediately. And if you didn't have some wherewithal, you were really behind the eight ball before you even had a chance to ask for help. So I think that's what we've seen. And there have been several examples in our membership of companies. One is a manufacturing company in the North Ward who makes baseball hats and bags and embroiders and makes them. He pivoted his business and did a lot of PPE. He made plastic face shields, over 500,000 of them, and is now selling face masks. So that kind of adaptability and the you know, having the wherewithal to adjust has been very important.
Yeah, it's amazing to see the, you know, the reinvention. But, you know, but I think what a lot of folks also, you know, fail to really talk about is been the impact on you know, the inner city and certain communities. You know, we're talking about Newark in particular. You know, the pandemic significantly impacted residents in local communities, especially in Newark. You know, unemployment, you know, increased hunger. How is the business community responding? How is your organization supporting these individuals?
Yeah, obviously the impact has been dramatic on people in cities and on non-white communities. And that's certainly been true in Newark. And what a lot of people don't realize, you know, statistics show that Black workers make up about 1 in 6 of all frontline workers. And when you talk about, you know, grocery and convenience and drug stores and public transportation and trucking and warehousing, the postal service, childcare. So these are the communities that have been most affected. And the business community has stepped up in a number of ways. Early on with PPE from major corporations that had stockpiled it, and they made sure it got in the hands of hospitals and other healthcare workers who needed it. Many of these organizations have made additional contributions to get computers for students, to grants for small businesses. So there's been an outpouring of help. And with so many people out of work, as you mentioned, hunger has been a very acute need. And I, you know, if we have time, I'd like to describe a couple efforts here in Newark.
No, please do. We'd love to hear about it. Yeah, please do.
One is called Newark Working Kitchens. And this was an effort, by Audible, which is located here, to help deliver nutritious meals to vulnerable populations, low-income seniors and families, the homeless, frontline medical responders. And what they did was they purchased meals from, they recruited or they reached out to local restaurants and enlisted them to make the meals, and then have donated money themselves and helped to raise money so that the very restaurants who would otherwise not have any business have been able to produce meals, which have then been delivered throughout the community. And it's been an exceptional effort that has been put together. Over the course of 23 weeks, 25 restaurants have been enlisted and get paid to do the preparation. And 440,000 meals have been served through that endeavor. So that's one example of a large company doing it. And we had a local business, Scopus Hospitality, that owns 4 restaurants, including one across the river here in Harrison, that did a very similar thing on a smaller level with a small nonprofit here and opened their restaurant to do the same kind of supportive thing just on a smaller scale. But You don't have to be a big corporation in order to help your community.
Yeah, and it sounds like another great reinvention that's actually adding value and helping our neighbors. So that's just a great job. You mentioned before a little bit about technology, and we've heard a lot about working from home and working remotely. What have you seen? What kind of impact has remote work had on the business community here in the most recent 3 months, 6 months, short term period of time? And where do you see remote working as a future event in Newark?
Well, there are many businesses that have been doing it, as we all know, for years as an accommodation of parents and to make on-the-road employees be more productive. In some cases, it was simply an extension of their existing practices. For many others, it was an awful abrupt departure from businesses as usual, and I count our organization among them. We came in every day. We worked here. And going remotely has been a great adjustment. Some of it was technology challenges we weren't prepared for, and I know we weren't alone in that, but we managed to do it in the long run anyway. I think the biggest challenge for employers has been those employees with school-aged children, and that was certainly true in March when this was all thrust upon them through the spring, and remains true even at this point when they've had a little bit more time to prepare. I think so for employers, I think that's been, that work-life balance has been more difficult than ever, given that you've got your computer there all the time and there are so many things that you've had to do from home. In the long term, who knows? I don't think it's going anywhere. I also think that businesses are concerned about their corporate culture and keeping that up when they've got everybody distant. Even though a lot of them have done a lot of very innovative things to keep their employees engaged, I think they're concerned about that. The camaraderie, the collaboration, the forward thinking, the strategizing is much more difficult, I think. Yeah. And I think in the long run, some of us may suffer for lack of having the ability to be in the same room.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're listening to another great episode of WABC's Mind Your Business here on 77 WABC. Chip, before I let you go, two last questions from me here. In the wake of the pandemic and the ongoing calls for racial equity, how is your organization changing and adjusting in these incredible times?
Yeah, Mike, we started 5 years ago working on different initiatives and largely as a result of being inspired by Mayor Baraka's leadership, looking to the business community to do more for those residents of Newark. So I think it's been a great journey for us. We started with a Young Entrepreneurs Academy, an after-school program, six-month program that we ran weekly for 15 to 20 Newark middle and high school kids. And that was an attempt to get them, if they had a business idea, to flesh out that business idea with mentors we provided, learn more about business, learn about entrepreneurial traits, put a business plan together, do a presentation, kind of a pitch before our investor panel, and then to try to inspire them to not just work for a business in the long run, but to run the business, to have it in their community, to hire their neighbors, and to begin to think about moving from generational poverty to generational wealth. And we followed that up with a survey of our members to ask them about diversity and inclusion, only to find out that there was a great interest in learning more about diversity and inclusion, but they didn't know very much at the time. And as a result, we've had a very extensive series of programs. We've had training sessions talking about unconscious bias, making sure people recognize that, as well as a mini series that we've worked on with the New Jersey Institute for Social Justice, talking about cracks in the foundation of our society and how Black and brown communities are disproportionately affected. And we've had several sessions of that mini series already, talking about educational disparities, about healthcare disparities, and also a session about law enforcement and discrimination there.
Chip, this has been a great segment, and thanks again for being on. I understand that you have an upcoming event coming on. Tell me about it.
Yeah, we do. Thanks for the opportunity to mention it. Every year we do a regional economic outlook program, which involves two presentations from economists about the national, the metro, and New Jersey state economy. And then we have a panel of members in different industries talk about what they expect to see in the year ahead. So it's a great opportunity for people to get some intelligence as you're preparing your budgets for the next year and looking to see how, you know, some of your customers and clients may be reacting to different forces. So we'd love to have people go to www.norcrbp.org and look at our calendar of events and sign up for what we think will be a very informative session.
This has been a great segment, Chip. And again, you know, I want to thank you for coming on the show tonight. You know, last question for me, we've got about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes before we cut to commercial. And I think you mentioned, you know, you talked about the mayor of Newark in your response a few moments ago, and this kind of dovetails to that response. How has the federal government, state government, and local government impacted the overall economic recovery? What else can and should be done?
Yeah, I think, let's face it, there were the federal government worked very hard at the very beginning when they came up with the CARES Act, a lot of things thrown together at once in an effort to get money in people's hands. So it's understandable that there would be, you know, a lot of problems. You know, there have been two subsequent federal government initiatives and everybody's waiting for the fourth, each hoping that they'll clean up some of the mess that previous additions have made of. I think, you know, from a state perspective, I think similarly, Governor Murphy did a very good job on the health aspects of keeping everybody in check. But we don't think that we've moved fast enough along to open restaurants, for instance, and gyms, which just recently opened, that there could have been a little bit more of aggressive opening because the health data indicated that could be done. So I think we're looking for that to continue. And we also are very wary of a state budget that relies very heavily on borrowing, has too much increased spending, and will do nothing but increase costs on a business community that's already reeling.
What a great segment. You're listening to 77 WABC's Mind Your Business. My thanks to Chip Howlick, President and CEO of the Newark Regional Business Partnership. Chip, thanks for joining us tonight and have a great week.
Mike, appreciate being on very much. Thank you.
Take care. We're going to take a commercial break, so please stay tuned.
Phil Sims and Boomer Esiason know the importance of having the right players on your team. So Investors Bank asked them to talk about business banking in their terms.
Hey, Boomer, what makes a winning team?
The right roster.
And the right game plan.
Yeah, and the right quarterback.
What are you trying to say?
Investors Bank builds strong relationships and provides customized business banking solutions grounded in knowing the needs of your business. Investors Bank is more than a business bank. They're your business partner. Investors Bank. Banking in your best interest. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
You're listening to another great episode on 77 WABC's Mind Your Business, presented this evening by Investors Bank. We have a great roster of guests tonight. We have Chip Howlick, President and CEO of the Newark Regional Business Partnership, Randy Piers, Brooklyn and CEO of the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce, Michelle Sikirka, President and CEO of the New Jersey Business and Industry Association, and Kevin Cummings, Chairman and CEO of Investors Bank. I am pleased to have now a local guest and quite frankly, a neighbor, Randy Piers, President and CEO of the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce. Randy joined the chamber as president in September of last year. He brings with him decades of workforce and economic development expertise and experience, and many years of executive leadership in growing not-for-profit organizations that serve the business communities. Randy, I was saying to you before, you were formerly the chair of the Community Board 7. And I grew up over there in the 80s, and I got to tell you, I love the community there. My parents are still living there, and I want to thank you for all the help that you've given that community over the years. And so welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It is an extraordinary community. It's almost like a microcosm of the city with the different commercial corridors, the industrial area, and then the different ethnic communities. It's just an amazing community board.
Yeah, and you know, and that's why I'm here tonight. You know, as a reminder, this is Yom Kippur, and I want to thank again Yitzhak Safwas for having me host the show this evening. Only in Brooklyn can an Irish guy from Sunset Park, you know, fill in for an Orthodox guy from Flatbush. And so again, Welcome to the show and glad to have you here. You know, so Randy, I mean, it's been a crazy year. I mean, I think 2020 is a year that we all would hopefully like to put behind us sooner rather than later. Give me a sense as to the business climate today. What's going on in Brooklyn?
I mean, for the small business community, it's a sort of a mix of hope and anxiety. And in some cases, it does depend upon the type of business or the industry that you're in. In some cases, it depends upon, you know, sort of where you're located. But the reality is small businesses are struggling. And this is really unprecedented territory, right? We don't know necessarily what the full extent of the impact will ultimately be. But Brooklyn businesses are resilient. I mean, they're, as we'll talk about later on, I mean, they've reinvented themselves in pretty unique and creative ways. They're accessing whatever support is available to businesses, and we wish there were more, but we'll talk about that as well. And, you know, we're just Brooklyn strong here. So, you know, we're trying to do our best under difficult circumstances. And we're doing all we can. The Brooklyn Chamber is doing all we can to support these businesses.
You know, so you have your ear to the ground, and you know, you're covering a very diverse borough. You know, and obviously different sectors and different neighborhoods have different types of businesses. What are you seeing in terms of businesses responding to the crisis? How are they reinventing themselves?
Yeah, and I've done, since phase one reopening in June, it seems like a long time ago, but it really was only just a few months ago. I've done 17 commercial corridor tours. You know, even before reopening, businesses were starting to diversify their product offerings, right? So if you were an essential business like a grocery store, you could stay open. If you were a clothing store, you couldn't reopen. But you could sell grocery items, and then you could open your doors and maybe sell a couple of clothing items. So, you know, that was an example of Brooklyn creativity before actual phase one. But beyond that, you know, since we've started to reopen, there's obviously been a lot of pivoting. There have been businesses that never before had an e-commerce operation. So almost overnight, they've adopted e-commerce. They've instituted technology like point of sale devices and contactless payment systems. We also had within the restaurant sector, you know, businesses that use the downtime to perfect their takeout and delivery, which made it a lot easier for them to then open outdoors because they had a foundation that was sort of already working and generating some income. So these were some examples of how businesses pivoted and they were able to sort of reinvent themselves. Another good example is businesses started home delivery almost overnight, right? So I had a toy store, for example, Fifth Avenue in Park Slope, that started to do home delivery of puzzles and other games because the kids were cooped up in the house and they needed something to do. So, you know, there was a lot of pivoting and sort of reorganization of business models. But those were some of the more creative approaches.
You know, we've talked a lot tonight about how businesses have had to reinvent themselves. Give me a sense of the role of how a chamber interacts with customers. And we've talked to Chip over at the Newark Regional Business Partnership. We've talked to Michelle at the NJBIA. You know, what role does a chamber play? How does the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce play in supporting small businesses in Brooklyn?
Yeah, so it's evolved. And so if we go back to March, when the economy went into full shutdown, the first thing we did was pivot and say, hey, look, we need to be the eyes, the ears, and the voice of the small business community, right? So we have to interface with the businesses as much as we can so that we could start to tell the story of what the impact's going to ultimately be. And at that point, we didn't really know. We didn't know how long it was going to last. We didn't know how deep we were going to go into this. We started to do a lot of survey work, for example. So monthly since April, we've been doing a small business survey where we've been asking sort of relevant questions about rent. We've been asking questions about revenue. We've been asking questions about PPE and what types of safety equipment do businesses need. And we've been tracking that data over time. We also launched something called the Bring Back Brooklyn Fund. So we at the Brooklyn Chamber, we actually have a community development financial institution, a CDFI, which is an affiliate of the chamber. So we could actually do micro lending and we could do small business loans. Of course, we needed to capitalize that loan fund because we knew on the back end of this, there was going to be a lot of need. So we launched this Bring Back Brooklyn Fund campaign. We raised over $750,000 for small business loans and for PPE grants. And then once phase one took hold, we shifted again and we started to put boots on the ground and really walk the commercial corridors, bring technical assistance directly to the businesses, sort of advertise and promote some of our programs. And even just be there to listen to what some of their challenges are. And I think just being out in the field so much and talking to so many businesses in and of itself was a support, right? Because they didn't have a lot of other folks that were sort of listening and hearing what those challenges were. So I think our team's done an amazing job. We've got some great partners too, I should mention. Fiserv, which manages Clover, which is a point of sale device that allows contactless payment. They actually launched a small business loan program. I was actually out a couple of weeks ago with their CEO delivering small business grants in Bed-Stuy to minority businesses. But they want to be helpful in developing and delivering this technology to businesses that never incorporated them before. We've got other partners like the BIDS and the local development corporations that we meet weekly with the BIDS and the LDCs, and we use them as an extension of our ability to kind of do outreach in the community. So there's been a lot going on. There's a lot that chambers can do. At this point, though, it's really about, from our perspective, boots on the ground, meeting the businesses where they're at, because they're trying to struggle, get things open, bring in some revenue. They don't have time to navigate government programs or regulations. So we're there to help them with that.
We're now going to take a brief commercial break. Please stay tuned.
Phil Sims and Boomer Esiason know the importance of a smart playbook. So Investors Bank asked them to talk about business banking in their terms.
Hey, Boomer, remember how you were always getting sacked?
Not what I call the right play.
Well, maybe you should have memorized the playbook.
Every page?
Investors Bank provides a proven playbook grounded in knowing the needs of your business. With industry experience in commercial real estate, technology, and healthcare, Investors Bank is more than a business bank. They're your business partner. Investors Bank. Banking in your best interest. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
You're listening to 77 WABC's Mind Your Business, presented this evening by Investors Bank. Randy, this one is near and dear to my heart, talking about Sunset Park. Lots going on down below 3rd Avenue with Industry City. And I know that last week there was a public hearing about the future of Industry City. Can you give us some insight about that?
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the most significant economic development project for job creation purposes in the borough of Brooklyn in over a decade, right? So, we're talking the potential of up to 20,000 jobs in the community by simply activating underutilized heavy industrial space, right? Using no sort of public monies. So it's completely privately financed. And really what Industry City is asking for is a simple zoning change to go from heavy manufacturing to light manufacturing, which will open up a wider range of uses, including additional retail, only up to 14%. So we're not talking a significant amount of retail, but we'll also allow them to talk to educational institutions and colleges to see if they could open up branch campuses within Industry City. It'll enable them to open up additional office space. And they've agreed to also do manufacturing set-asides, right? I mean, it's a 6 million square foot campus. There's a lot of space to work with, and the zoning change will just give them more flexibility in terms of attracting tenants and diversifying the job mix and then creating new opportunities. So yeah, we had the city council held its public hearing last week. By the way, that's the last step in the ULURP process, the Uniform Land Use Review process for the city. The project itself, which had been in the works for over 4 years, but the project itself has already kind of gone through public review at the community board level. Community board level chose not to take a definitive position on the project. It then moved over to the borough president. Borough president was generally in support of the project with some conditions. It went back to city planning. The city planning voted almost unanimously with only one dissenting vote to approve the project. And now it's at the last and final step, the one that counts, which is the city council vote. So the local city council member, after dragging his feet for quite some time and not really negotiating in good faith, ultimately came out against the project. But there are 51 council members who see this, who should see this as an important project for the borough and the city, 20,000 jobs for New Yorkers, and they're going to have to weigh in. And at the end of the day, it's either going to pass And if it doesn't pass, those who voted against it are going to have to answer to the constituencies why they turned down jobs and opportunities.
It's a complicated topic, to say the least, it sounds like.
As you could probably figure where I stand on it based on my comments.
Yeah, loud and clear. So Randy, the Brooklyn Chamber recently conducted a survey. What did you learn?
Yeah, so actually we've been doing monthly small business surveys starting back in April. And we average between 250 to 350 small businesses that actually respond. There are some things we ask every month. So every month we've asked about rent. Simply we asked, have you missed your rent payment this month? And did your landlord offer a concession? The highest we've heard in terms of missed rent was back actually in May. 46% of the businesses indicated that they missed their rent payment. Only 21% indicated that they got some sort of concession from their landlord. It's dropped. In August, it was 28% who missed rent, 25% who received concessions. But August was the first month we also asked about back rent. 39% of the small businesses indicated that they owe some sort of back rent. So this is a big issue that is something that we're going to need to address. We also asked the businesses to rate what their support needs are in terms of importance. It always comes out that grants, not loans, is sort of top of the list. They need grant support. They need real rent relief. And the third thing is interesting. They need government to really become a partner in this recovery. As regulations, health and safety regulations change almost daily, they need to be educated by the enforcement agencies. They don't necessarily need to be slapped with fines and violations. And let's remember, even under these conditions, even a small fine or violation can help push a small business out of business. So we hope that government will, you know, sort of roll back some of the overzealous enforcement that we've seen over the last couple of weeks, particularly with restaurants, but also in some of the other industries as well.
Yeah, and you know, and we've heard a lot tonight about the need for a better public-private partnership. Last question from me, Randy. Thanks very much for being on the show tonight. You know, as we look out for the next year to 18 months, you know, what has to happen for? Again, we're going to lose some businesses, unfortunately. But for the majority of our small businesses that are in the boroughs, that are in our home borough of Brooklyn, what has to happen, and what do you think businesses are going to need from government and/or from the private sector to help themselves get up and running again?
Well, I mean, some of it's going to hinge upon whether the federal government comes through with a stimulus package or not, right? I mean, that is something I think we're all sort of waiting for. It's stalled right now in Washington. I'm not optimistic we'll get action on that until after the November elections. But it's our hope, at least, that the small business elements that are being discussed, which, by the way, both Republicans and Democrats seem to support, can find a way to get approved. And then we'll be the catalyst to sort of make sure that the businesses access these things. So that's number one. I mean, number two, this issue of rent is really going to come back at some point. It's going to have to be addressed, right? So, you know, absent outright rent concessions being mandated by government, we have to look for some creative solutions. We're working with the city council on a recovery lease proposal. In essence, it would allow landlords to engage in lease renegotiations with small businesses, and we'd have to define what a small business is and who would qualify. But if they do that, and if they sort of offer the appropriate concessions, they could apply for a property tax abatement, up to 10 years worth of property tax abatement. So it's a balance between giving some relief to a landlord and then some relief to a small business tenant. So I think the issue of rent does need to be addressed. I mean, clearly the thing that could make or break this recovery is, where will we go with COVID? If there is another spike and if we have to shut down completely again, I don't know what to tell you at that point, because I'm not sure most of our small businesses could survive another full shutdown. So, you know, our ability just to manage the actual health crisis and do the right thing in terms of social distancing, masks and sanitizers and things like that, I think is gonna continue to be important. So, you know, these are the things that are gonna really determine over the next 12 to 18 months, how we make it out of this this really challenging time.
So Randy, as we wrap up this segment tonight, What services or resources are available through the chamber?
Well, first off, on brooklynchamber.com, which is our website, there's a COVID-19 business resources page. So we update this daily. So anything a business needs to know about available resources, both public and private, as well as changing regulations, we try and get that information up on that webpage so that businesses kind of have this one-stop access to that particular information. Our Bring Back Brooklyn Fund is still taking contributions. So if you're an average everyday Brooklynite who just cares about your local small business and wants to lend some support, we have a vehicle for you to donate to our microloan fund. These are no interest recovery loans, 0% interest, 0% fees, up to $10,000. And in some cases, that's all a business needs to kind of keep going. So there are two options available right now. And as we roll out more feet on the street, we are actually we're hiring right now, getting business recovery specialists on board. We'll be coming to the different commercial corridors and offering on-site technical assistance. So if you need that more immediate, just contact us through info@brooklynchamber.com, and we will dispatch one of our recovery specialists to come out and support you.
This wraps up another great episode of WABC's Mind Your Business, presented this evening by Investors Bank. My thanks this evening to Michelle Sikirka of the NJBIA, Kevin Cummings of Investors Bank, Chip Halleck of the Newark Regional Business Partnership, and Randy Piers, CEO of the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce. This is Mike McIntyre of Investors Bank. Thanks for joining us this evening, and have a great week.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
Phil Sims and Boomer Esiason know the importance of a smart playbook, so Investors Bank asked them to talk about business banking in their terms.
Hey, Boomer, remember how you were always getting sacked?
Not when I called the right play.
Well, maybe you should have memorized the playbook.
Every page?
Investors Bank provides a proven playbook grounded in knowing the needs of your business. With industry experience in commercial real estate, technology, and healthcare, Investors Bank is more than a business bank. They're your business partner. Investors Bank. Banking in your best interest. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.